Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at theopenhouse.net.au blog site.
There's a time for everything, says the writer of Ecclesiastes. It's one of the most famous passages in the Bible. We're not always aware, though, of the seasons of our lives until we've actually passed through them. Then we can stop and look back and make some sort of sense of it all. In her book, My Seventh Monsoon, Naomi Reid looks back over the seasons of her life from the middle of a Nepali monsoon, 120 days. The rain pours down, the fog closes in, but during that time, Naomi starts to see her life more clearly. Naomi is back living in Australia now, and she's joined us tonight on Open House. Welcome, Naomi.
Thank you very much.
And I must say congratulations on the award, second place for Australian Christian Book of the Year.
Amazing.
Of course you were expecting it, weren't you?
Not at all, not in the slightest.
You've kind of come to the writing thing almost secondhand. I mean, it really wasn't your initial intention to actually write a book, was
no,
it?
No, it wasn't. I'm a physiotherapist. I have a science background. So getting the award, writing the book, it was all just a surprise, but obviously part of what God had in mind for me. Mm.
Well, it really recounts, I guess, quite a story, quite a journey. And let's start at the beginning. You went to Nepal in 1993. Why Nepal?
Yeah, so back in 1993, my husband and I, we were newly married. We were a young couple in our 20s. We'd just graduated as physios, but really just very overcome by the love of God for us, by what he'd done for us through his son, and wanting to take seriously his command to go, to share the good news, to share his love with others, you know, his command to love others as he had first loved us. Mm. So thinking through, what did that mean? And that command has to extend beyond the friendly and the familiar. It has to extend to the neediest parts of the world, because that's how far his love extends. And so it's partly thinking through, well, where are the neediest places where the workers were the fewest? And Nepal in those days, back in the 90s, it was a country of 20 million people. It's a Hindu kingdom, and 90% of the population follow the Hindu religion. It was one of the 10 poorest countries in the world. So for us as physios, thinking through, well, where can we serve? Where are the needs? We came to understand that there were two Nepali physios for the whole population of 20 million. And there we were, you know, working at Westmead Hospital, where there are 50 just for the area. Mm. So it became, well, how could we not go? But I think, it's more than that. It's the needs, but also God. I think when he's leading you somewhere, he burdens you with that place and that people. And he does that through all sorts of ways. For us, it was magazine articles, people you meet. You know how you just...
Mm-hmm. Couldn't get away?
No, that's right. It's just always on your heart. And that's how often he leads, I think, the needs, the burden. And then he just works the details out. So specifically, it came into place. INF, which was our mission, the International Nepal Fellowship, they had two spots for two physios right at the time where we were looking. One was in a leprosy hospital, one was in a general hospital. And so we just, everything fitted into place and we left.
And how did you adjust to Nepali life? I mean, it's very, very different from Australian life.
Yeah, that's right. With great difficulty. Yeah. I think working anywhere cross-culturally in a third world country is very, very hard. I think initially, you know, you go there because you think you have skills or whatever to give and there are needs, but then like coming face to face with how inadequate we are. You know, you get there and we didn't know any language.
Well, there were two physiotherapists for 20 million people,
right.
And then there
so,
were four.
That's right. So incredible needs, but also, you know, not having the language yet. And for me, even, you know, I couldn't put on my sari, I couldn't go and collect water, I couldn't even make a pot of Nepali chia, let alone a dal bhat. It's sort of facing that whole inability to function within this new environment and learning how to do everything from scratch takes a lot of energy, and facing the fact that initially, you know, we're not that fruitful. And maybe even in the West, you know, we think about being productive or being fruitful in the eyes of sort of, you know, Western standards of achievement. But, you know, in God's eyes, it's not like that. It's about continuing to be faithful and remain in him and be in him, even when we feel like we're not doing all that much. So it's sort of coming to terms with all of that and learning how to live within a completely different culture where even the basics, you know, the whole water and electricity and foods available and all of that is so, so different.
So how long did it take you to actually feel like, well, maybe Nepal is starting to become home?
Oh, becoming home. Oh, definitely around, you know, 1 to 2 years. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Takes a while, doesn't it? Because then the third year, you arrived in 93. 96, you actually came back home.
That's
on
right.
On what is often called furlough, I take it. Return home to see family and everything like that, raise more support, etc. You planned on staying for 6 months and stayed for...
7 years, yeah.
Which was also unexpected.
Very unexpected. So at the end of the first three-year term, we thought by then that God's leading had been clear, the needs were there, and we'd... we'd carry on. Our involvement in the church had been really good, and we'd been able to have our first son. He was born there after a couple of years. So then, as you said, we came home for 6 months, left all our belongings there, didn't say goodbye, and didn't go back for 7 years. And during the first 18 months of that, I had 5 miscarriages, and one of them was really quite late in pregnancy. And it's a difficult time, very sad, very just very confusing as well. Not only were we dealing with the grief of that, but wanting to know, well, what are you doing? Mm. You ask those questions. His leading had been clear. We had thought it was a fruitful place where we could use our gifts. Then, facing the fact that it didn't, seemingly the door was now shut. So I guess, facing that was very difficult. I think up until then I'd had a more childlike image of God where, he's a God of love. He loves me. He's redeemed me. He has a plan for my life. And almost even thinking, well, therefore he's going to make it clear. Not necessarily easy, but clear. Maybe that's what it felt like he'd done up until that point. So that was the first time of actually facing it and getting to the point somehow of being able to, sit within the midst of it, tears still streaming down my face and going, Lord, I don't understand, but I believe that you're sovereign in my life, even now, even when I can't see anything, don't understand, don't know what's going to happen. Because not only had we had the 5 miscarriages, not long after that, my husband, Darren, who was a really fit young man, it turned out that he had a life-threatening heart condition. And he went off to hospital, was whisked off, really, to have 3 major heart operations, not knowing if that was going to fix the problem. So he was in hospital having one of them. And my father, who was an elite rock climber, he had a fall and became a paraplegic. And he was whisked off by air ambulance to another hospital. And so again, I had husband.
Oh,
and
you talk about
father.
An annus horribilis. That was 7 years of horribilis, wasn't it?
It was a difficult year. A few years, really. It just went on. And again, just clinging on to God. But realizing that through that, he was present with me. He was giving me the strength. He was giving me the comfort to get through it. And many people say now, how did you? And I say, oh, I don't know. I just know that he was with me. And that was all I needed to know. And that, it says in Isaiah, he gives strength to the weary. He just does. He gives us the strength to walk through the hardest of times. And he doesn't necessarily make them easy or the road smooth, but he walks it with us.
Yes.
And that's better than a smooth path.
Yeah. Right around Australia, this is Open House. We're talking to Naomi Reid, author of My Seventh Monsoon. The openhouse.net.au has the podcast. So here you are. You've come back for 6 months, return from Nepal. You stay 7 years because of all these crises. You, like you said, you've actually left all your goods back home. You haven't actually packed up and said, do you know actually what the Nepalese folks were actually saying to you? Are you coming back?
Yeah, they did. Everybody was saying that, our Nepali friends and the mission. And they were wanting to know what we were doing. And our supporters here were also wanting to know. And it was a difficult time of not knowing what would come out of it. And the doctors, of course, were saying, well, if you want to have another child, you can't go back to Nepal. You can't be pregnant or give birth there again, because our first child had been born very small, less than 2 kilograms, in the middle of a Nepali monsoon as well. So that was difficult without any medical care. But by about 5 years later, we were able to have 2 more children, both tiny, but, quite close to the neonatal intensive care unit, which was lovely.
Great.
And then my husband recovered. And so by the time 2003, I think, we were able to go back for another 3-year term.
So you get back, 2003. Uh-huh. Then you have to go through the whole culture thing again. You've actually got to, you've almost had, culture shock, reverse culture shock coming back to Australia,
right.
And reverse culture shock going back to Nepal.
Well, that was completely different as well, because we were going back to what was home for Darren and I, but the 3 boys, that was a whole new thing for them. So carrying their adjustments. And we went back to train physios that time, which was fantastic because of the need, as I said before, for trained Nepali physios. So lots of things were really good, but in any term, in another culture, it's full of challenges as well. And so the challenges for me were particularly to do with the civil war, which had been waging since 1996. The Maoists were waging an insurgency against the government. So we had things like curfews after dark every night. We had roadblocks on our road from Kathmandu to Dulikal. We had the sounds of bombs and gunfire quite close by. So there was all that uncertainty of not knowing what was going to happen. And then I guess one of the hardest times during that particular 3-year period was leading up to our 7th monsoon. And the monsoon, as you said, it rains in Nepal from the beginning of June till the end of September, which is 120 days of rain. And you can imagine
4 months.
Yeah, me with the kids, and, you know, there's just washing everywhere, there's mold everywhere. And, you know, our boys by that stage were 4, 5, and 10. And so you can imagine them stuck inside a Nepali house for that long. And I was having to homeschool because there wasn't any schools nearby. And, you know,
cabin fever.
That's right. No car, no transport, no television, no shopping centre, no museum nearby. You know,
no friends.
There were some friends, but the other difficulty was that there was a lovely Irish family who we saw quite a bit of. They were also homeschooling, but just prior to that monsoon, they moved to Kathmandu, so we were really missing them. We of course had Nepali friends, but as well as that, my closest Nepali friend from church, she was my age. She had 3 kids, the same age as my kids. She was diagnosed with an inoperable brain tumour just prior to that monsoon and given 3 months to live. So there was that terrible stress as well of wanting to spend more time with her through those months and to travel that journey with her. But that was difficult because of the rain, the boys, the war. So I think, yeah, just facing that monsoon with all those stresses, I sort of started to look out at the rain and just think, how am I going to do it? How am I going to get through this season? And I think even longing, therefore, to be somewhere else, you know, and I think we all do that, Sheridan, when we face a hard time, is that we look, you know, back to some time when it was easier, or forward when it might all be over, or, you know, somewhere for me, you know, that was drier or with more friends or more comfortable. Yeah, as well as sort of longing to be somewhere else, though, it was God was really speaking to me about well, what is it about seasons? How does he work his purposes through seasons of our lives? And how does he maybe show us things about himself that we can't see in other seasons? What is unique about each season that we live through, rather than just longing for it to be over? He's actually put us there for a reason and for a purpose to grow in understanding of him. Yes. So I started to think about that a great deal. And at the same time, I looked back on the other seasons of my life, some of which I've talked about, a season of longing or distraction or fear. And then so I just started typing away, and I would type sort of from 9 till midnight every second night while everyone else was asleep. And of course we had power cuts for 6 hours a day. So what I would do is I put 2 candles either side of the laptop, and I'd peer really close because I could hardly see, and I could just work until the battery, you know, died. And so there I would be typing away and type through a whole that monsoon, just looking back on my life.
The physiotherapist, homeschooling mum, missionary in Nepal, suddenly becomes an author. Isn't
that
interesting?
It's completely surprising. But the most helpful thing for me was being able to look back and see God's faithfulness in
the past. Where I want to go next. I want to see, what did you learn as you then reviewed those 7 monsoons, of course, metaphorical, part literal. What did you then learn? How did you then see or get some sort of clarity on your life looking back?
Yeah, I just came to see that whatever the season that he'd led us through, he had been present. And that's his promise. It's his promise all through the Bible.
And how did you discern that?
Present. Just through understanding what had happened, how he'd maybe comforted me or led me, or thinking specifically through each season, what was that like? What was that like in terms of my relationship with him? How did I grow? How did he teach me? What was unique about each one? And so in looking back and dividing it up in that way, I began to see things that I didn't see necessarily as I was living them. And so because of looking back and seeing that, I could draw strength from that, from the season that I was in. So he gave me then the assurance that no matter what happened in that season, even if things got politically worse, which of course they did, they led up to the revolution, he would be with me. And that's the greatest promise that we can hold on to. He doesn't say that it's going to be easy or the tragedy won't happen, but he'll say that in that he'll be with us. And that was the greatest thing for me to understand.
Open House right across Australia, theopenhouse.net.au, has the interview we're conducting with Naomi Reid, author of My Seventh Monsoon, came second in the Australian Christian Book of the Year Awards recently. So here you are, you're still going through the 120 days of pouring rain, you're typing out this little manuscript that becomes the book. Did it actually help you in the moment?
Oh, absolutely. It did, because it made me think, well, here in this season where he's allowed me to be, what can I enjoy? What can I appreciate? How can I grow now, rather than longing for it all to be over?
Okay, and practically, how did that work out? What could you enjoy? What could you then look forward to?
It was about appreciating the fact that I do, well, have lots of times with the boys. I have, you know, still my relationships with the Nepali people around me that I can enjoy. And also I can start to even see even more, like what the Nepali women were going through. For example, like we'd meet after church once a month, the women, and one of them would tell me that her son had been abducted by Maoists and didn't know if she'd see him again. Another one was unable to complete her schooling because the Maoists had called an educational strike. All the schools were shut down for weeks on end. And another one, one of our students had had their house bombed by Maoists. So around me, not only was I struggling, but of course, you know, the women were going through a profoundly difficult time. So the thing that helped me, I guess, was watching them. And instead of them saying describing the hopelessness of the situation, which the newspapers were doing, you know, newspapers were saying Nepal is a nation tumbling towards anarchy, you know, predicting dire things. But the Christian women were saying, no, even in this setting where we don't know what's happening next and there are bombs on the road and we can't get to Kathmandu and we can't leave our town, even now, God is giving us peace and he's giving us hope and he's at work in our lives. And, you know, they're still going along to church and praising God. And even, you know, when elections have been called or the king's taken over and you know, violence is erupting, they're still saying, no, God, he is still Lord. Even in war, he's still God, and they're still praising him. So that was an amazing thing for me to be able to learn through fellowshipping with them.
And I bet there must have been a sweetness about that community that you actually had there with those folks, because there's something about, for a start, relationship with God and actually the fact that, well, Christians share the Holy Spirit. You've actually already got something actually in common with somebody else because you've got a person living within you who actually is common to all. At the same time, though, the external hardships that draw you together, you have to lean and support
that's
on each other, don't you?
That's right.
You have to pray together.
Yeah, living it together, struggling together, and yet coming together, to pray and sing. And I remember one Nepali pastor, he'd come up, he'd walk through, there'd been lots of strikes and no transport running, so he'd walked for days to get to our church. And he said, in these days of civil war, fellowship, meeting together, it's always been good in Nepal, but it's even better. And he was absolutely right.
It's the paradox, isn't it? It always is the paradox. There's a whole bunch of people listening to us who are going through their own monsoons, their own metaphorical storms of life, and they cannot see anything. All they can see is the rain and the clouds and everything like that. From what you've experienced, from what you've learned, what's your encouragement to them? How do they walk through this? How do they get some sort of meaning, some sort of clarity on what's going on?
The picture that helped me the most was when the monsoon comes, of course, the Himalayas, which are stunning, they seem like they disappear. And so we would look out our window. Normally in the other seasons, you'd see the whole Lang Tang range of the Himalayas, including Everest. But we'd look out during the monsoon and one of my sons would say, are the mountains there or have they gone? And it was a funny question because, of course, the Himalayas, the mighty Himalayas, do not just fall over and slip away into the sea. They're still there, but the clouds are covering it. And, of course, that was a great encouragement to me to remember that God is still there. As I said before, you know, it's easy to think this is a hard time, I don't know how to get through it, and I can't hear God's voice or whatever, and maybe he's abandoned me. The truth is that he hasn't. He's walking it with us. He's carrying us. He's loving us. He's comforting us. He's bringing people into our lives that can help and encourage. He's never, ever left us, and he never will.
And echoing that comment by that pastor, I wonder whether also in those seasons of life, that's when you most need to gravitate to other people who are walking the path of Christ with you.
That's right. And God will provide those people as well. And you're right. Let's go and look for them, you know, share those difficult times with them and gain that encouragement to go on walking with God through those times.
Lessons hard learnt, but certainly not quickly forgotten.
No, that's right.
Naomi, great to talk to you.
You too.
Thanks for joining us. Naomi Reid there, author of My Seventh Monsoon. Also, there's a follow-up that's been written too. Probably get some sort of award this time next year, maybe, hey? It's called No Ordinary View. They're both published by Ark House Press. Naomi and Darren went out to Nepal with International Nepal Fellowship too. You might be interested in their work or the organisation that took them. INF.org is the website.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit theopenhouse.net.au.